KXLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota.
From WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota, this is Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Wednesday, April 10th. A proposed project that would create a theater for the Sarasota Players at the city-owned Payne Park Auditorium is facing competition. The Players' latest plans have drawn resistance from some community members who say the project takes up too much park space and that it is not consistent with the creation of Payne Park itself or what was originally pitched to the City Commission. Now, city officials are hearing about a new proposal for the facility that would not require expanding the footprint of the venue into the park. Unidos Now is a group that works to enhance the life of the area's Hispanic community, and its chair, Kelly Kirshner, has reached out to City Manager Marlon Brown about using Payne Park Auditorium as a base of operations for its community programs. He said the organization would also partner with cultural arts group Crearte Latino, which he said is losing its lease at the airport mall near Sarasota-Bradenton International Airport. Governor Ron DeSantis yesterday signed a bill that seeks to prevent smash-and-grab thefts and porch piracy. HB 549 will take effect on July 1st. It will make it a third-degree felony to act together with five or more people to overwhelm stores and steal items. The measure also will make it a second-degree felony to solicit other people through social media to participate in retail theft. The executive director of the Florida Republican Party was hiding out in a hotel in Kissimmee near Orlando, laying waste to everything within reach when his family reported him missing last week. George Riley Jr., who is 43 years old, was thrown out by the Hampton Inn due to extensive drinking and the damage caused to the room, a police report said, according to the Tampa Bay Times. Hotel employees said Riley had urinated and vomited throughout, trashed the room's electric blinds, and was charged an additional fee for a deep cleaning to try and undo the mess. In a statement to the Times, Riley said, "I am deeply sorry. I have been dealing with alcoholism and mental health issues. I will pay for any damages that were caused. I apologize to the employees for my bad behavior, and I will be seeking help soon." This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Wednesday, April 10th.
Welcome to the Peace and Justice Report. I'm Tom Walker. Bob Connors is on the line, and we're here for the last 2 hours of our membership drive for this year, and we're live every morning from Wednesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Bob's in New Orleans. Are you there, Bob?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Great.
And Alvaro is on the control board helping us out. And Bob, you usually say this, but I'll remind people that the opinions you hear on this show are our own or those of our guests, and not necessarily those of the WSLR's board, its employees, or its volunteers. But today, one of our main messages is we're in the last 2 hours of the Giving Partner Challenge. You can double your money. You can turn $100 into $200, and there's about 720 nonprofits in Sarasota and Manatee counties and two other counties trying to raise money. And in this, they didn't have it last year, but this year they've come back. And so until noon, you can actually go to givingchallenge.org and key in your favorite charities like WSLR and donate. And every cent up to $100 will be doubled from $25 to $100. So I think that's great. And we're part of the last 3 hours of the campaign here, where they will double that. They'll stop at noon. So if you're listening to us and you really want to help out, go to givingchallenge.org and That's all one word, givingchallenge.org, and key in WSLR. And when you do, if they ask, there's a field called In Memory Of, you can put in Peace and Justice Report or any of your other favorite music shows that you listen to here on the station. So, Bob, what are you doing in New Orleans?
Well, I had booked this trip before I realized we were on the last day of the fun drive a few months ago. So there's a French Quarter Festival beginning tomorrow through Sunday, where there's 22 stages, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, all Louisiana music. And John Dickman and I were here last year. And it's just an incredible time. You talk about the jazz, you talk about blues, Cajun, Zydeco, bluegrass, Americana. Everything is represented in the city of New Orleans because it's one of the music capitals of the world. So we're thrilled to be here. It was an adventure getting here last night. We left early enough, but it took us 45 minutes to get out of Bradenton. And somehow we got to the airport on time. Bye. We're here, and I just got a note from one of our supporters, Catherine Soderberg, just made a generous donation, and a few supporters last night, I noticed, had contributed. Judy Longshore, a longtime supporter, and John DeSylvester, and, you know, we must get the word out there to all those supporters and listeners who have been so generous over the years, because people want to hear from you. I have a brief story, Tom.
Yes.
I had a real loyal listener up in Chattanooga, and he'd always ask me, hey, when's the fun drive coming along where you can double your money? And I said, well, I will keep you abreast of that. You know, they didn't have it last spring, but probably next spring and during the course of the year. Then he donated in the fall. And then, to stay in January, and I said, you know, Steve, next time is to double your money. And he said, Bob, I have prostate cancer, and I don't think I'm going to be here. But I'm going to send you a check for $100 so you can hold on to it. And it brings tears to my eyes, right, as I'm relating this story to you, Bob.
Oh,
you know. And he sent me a $100 check in January, and this was like 2 or 3 years ago when that we had that fund drive, and so it just goes to show you, are people out there who want to hear from you.
Let me say, Bob, that we had some callers just in the last 5 minutes. Bob Trotel and Margo Schneelach sent $100. An anonymous donation was sent in. Dr. Joe sent in $5,000 just now to our show, to the station. So thank you. Thank you, Dr. Joe. I'm sorry?
My goodness gracious. Yeah. That'll support all the shows and Fogartyville, and, that's a beautiful thing, to say the least.
And A&M sent in $25, and Stanley Uden sent in $100. And there'll be more coming in if I refresh this page and keep looking at it. So thank you, everybody. Thank you for all our listeners. Thank you for listening, first of all, but thank you for supporting us and helping keep us on air. And especially thank you to Dr. Joe. That's an amazing contribution. I have a guest this morning. Well, actually, I have two guests, but the second one will come in at the half-hour mark. Today, our first guest is Jared Cozy from On the Spot Aid. On the Spot Aid is a street medicine outreach, and their website is onthespotaid.com. Jared is a paramedic, and he's has 21 years experience in fire and EMS, and he's the clinic director at On the Spot. He's also an EMS instructor. So welcome, Jared. Tell us about yourself and then what you do.
I want to start off by saying thank you for having me on. And what we do is we are an outreach, that medical outreach for the homeless. Approximately 6 years ago, two ladies, Bonnie and Cindy, they were volunteering their time at a homeless organization, and they were feeding and they were helping clothe. One is a paramedic, one is a nurse, and what they had noticed is there is this huge gap between the homeless and healthcare. Some of the unhoused population would come into these organizations to help get food and everything, but they would have festering wounds on them and little things that could have been prevented.
Mm-hmm.
So being a paramedic, being a nurse, they thought, what can we do to help this? And it's easy once you're trained to be able to assess a person.
Sure.
That's the big part about the medical field, being trained to assess. And if it's something that you can just help out with that's medical, like maybe cleaning and dressing that wound up and taking care of it, it goes a long way. So they began doing that out of the trunk of their car. And they started the organization up and began getting donations in and medical supplies that were kept in their garage.
Mm-hmm.
And so as the time went by, they started making connections with other organizations, mm-hmm. and began what's called street medicine, on the spot what we like to call street medicine. And basically what that is, it's we're not out there doing prescription drugs. We're not out there, mm-hmm. and anybody in the medical field understands what I mean when I say doing wound debridement.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you have to scrape away and cut mm-hmm. away and then let good stuff. We're not doing stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing is basically, it's to use the layman term, is first aid. And we'll come out and we'll bring that first aid out. If you could walk into Walgreens, mm-hmm. or a CVS or any pharmacy, and you can buy it off the counter, and that's what we're using out there in our street medicine program, because I know it sounds simple to an everyday thing. Hey, I've got a headache. I'm going to go get some ibuprofen.
Right.
Those in the unhoused population, getting that ibuprofen could be like winning a lottery ticket or something sometimes, having access to it. And so that what we've learned throughout doing it is that treatment that costs $15 initially can sometimes prevent that $30,000 ICU stay.
Of course.
As it gets as wounds fester, illnesses grow, they're not being able to treat it like, you know, general population can just treat it from home. They're not able to, because they're out there sleeping in the woods. They're out there sleeping on the streets. They don't have anywhere to go, keep it clean. And so the goal is always to prevent that clog up, that long-term issue from happening. And when that long-term issue happens, that brings it narrows that passage to the hospital. We have that clog going on.
Mm-hmm.
That hospital, the EMS services are bogged down at times, going on calls that could have been prevented about 3 months prior by a simple treatment.
So how do you find homeless people? Where do you go? Because they sometimes hide or camp out.
They do. There's such a stigma for homeless. And so the homeless don't like to be seen.
Uh-huh.
No matter, you know, we all think that we hear the word homeless and we think of the man on the street that's stopping traffic and causing that nuisance out there. Well, that's not, it's been my experience, that's not the majority of the homeless. That's a person who's having a mental health breakdown.
Right.
And being a paramedic for 21 years, I can tell you right now, I've had just as many calls into the housed population
mm-hmm.
for that mental health breakdown as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the homeless will like to go out and hide. So when we set up, initially, the organization had it's rough to get started and to gain a trust.
Mm-hmm.
A homeless person, you walk up and say, are you homeless? They'll most likely tell you no.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know if you're a police officer, you're going to kick them off the corner.
Right.
They're nervous. They have nowhere to go. So what we've done is we've partnered with other organizations
mm-hmm.
and churches, things, gatherings where they want to help feed the homeless, where they want to bring in clothes. And we have a wonderful organization we work with called Jesus Loves You Ministries that brings shower trailers to places, allows the homeless to get a shower.
Wow.
And we'll go to these events and we'll set up what we call our street medicine clinic. And that's where we sit down. We start to learn who they are. At this point in time, it's been a little over 5 going on to 6 years. And at this point in time, we've gained a lot of trust in the homeless community.
Mm-hmm.
And so now what happens is the homeless actually speak for us.
They call you.
Yeah, they contact us whatever way they can. They call us. They get the number from other organizations call us. And or if somebody newly mm-hmm. homeless, they're mm-hmm. like, hey, you know, you need to speak to some people on the spot. And that's kind of the nature of what we do, though, how we become that kind of a first contact, because we are going out to the camp sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we'll call and say, hey, you know, I got this wound here. Can you look at this for me? And if we're available, we'll make it out there. A lot of times, though, however, we're not a 24/7 organization like fire and EMS.
Right.
We'll talk to them on the phone and say, hey, you need to really go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could go out and we can take a look at it and we can clean it up for them mm-hmm. and help them out, that's what we do. And we gain their trust. We often work with other organizations, and sometimes after a while, those organizations, they start to trust them as well, and we can take them right out to a campsite with us.
Right, right. So. I know you sent me a note. You said that you had 971 interventions last year. That's a lot of help.
That is a lot of medical interventions that we've done. A lot of those are the, like I said, they're simple little things
mm-hmm.
that could be prevented, that could fester and become a major mm-hmm. issue in the future. 971.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. And also, you mentioned recuperative care hospital diversion. What's involved with that?
Well, outside of street medicine, we have a couple other things that we do.
Uh-huh.
And recuperative care is, it kind of, it took feet last year, really. There was a lady who had surgery, and she was, of course, homeless, and she had a surgery on her elbow. I'm trying not to get too much personal information to identify anybody.
Yeah.
But basically what happened was after that, she had nowhere to go. So she had same-day surgery. She's released. She's
right.
out there on a bicycle, and she's trying to get to her camp. Site. She wrecks. She's still under the effect of anesthesia. She wrecks the entire surgery with the pins completely ruined. Another surgery had to be scheduled in. So a couple months down the line, she has her other surgery. We're dealing with her. We're talking to her, and we were able to put her up in recuperative, what we call a recuperative care. We did not have a building at the time that could house it. So we were putting her in a hotel, going every day, making mm-hmm. sure she had food, mm-hmm. making sure she was able to get her prescriptions. We were able to help her get her prescriptions following surgery, and just basically check on her, bring her items, you know, simple items off the shelf like triple antibiotic ointment that can help keep sure. and prevent this stuff up. And we put her up for a couple of days, and she was strong enough to go back out there and the surgery was a success at that point.
Huh.
So, what we found, however, is that a lot of times they can't have procedures done.
No,
people can't have procedures done and be told, "Hey, we're going to send you to the street afterwards. Sorry, you're discharged to the streets." Now, a lot of times, the homeless will don't want anybody to know, so they have it done. But if they are honest and they say, hey, I'm homeless, I'm up here, and they sometimes they'll say no. For instance, we had a gentleman who needed a cardiac procedure done,
mm-hmm.
and he was not able to get that done. Well, here we have our recuperative care building,
mm-hmm.
and we're like, hold on, let's talk to this situation.
Mm-hmm.
I understand this is a procedure that, you know, it's kind of, you don't want to do that and send somebody out to the streets. And so we were able to step in and give this gentleman his place to stay following this procedure. And these are life-prolonging procedures sometimes.
Sure.
That he wasn't able to get to say, hey, we're going to give you a place to stay. Now, when I say recuperative care, one of the big confusions about recuperative care is we're not a rehab facility. We're not a nursing home. We're a place to recuperate and get stronger. Because while out at our street clinics, mm-hmm. our street medicine clinics, we have nurses, we have paramedics, we have EMTs out there. We may not have a nurse in there. We may not have a paramedic in the recuperative care. Our volunteers in there are just sometimes what we call companion volunteers, and those companion volunteers are extremely important to us. They're kind of like the rock stars of what we do a lot of times. They're driving them to mm-hmm. medical procedures, taking them, bringing them food, and but they're just there to make sure everything's going fine with them. And so it's kind of a narrow qualification, but it's a service that has that's what we see is highly in need.
Just 1 second, let me. That's so interesting, and I'm sure you're probably saving a lot of lives. You know, things that could become worse, they don't become worse. I really admire what you guys are doing. But let me break in and just say we've had some donors during this hour, and we appreciate it. Deanne Kuhler says, sent a donation. My wife sent a donation. Susan Shuttley, Heather Siegel, excuse me for mispronouncing these names, Elaine Bolton, and she says, may the voices of the people be heard, and may our hearts be transformed, united, and awakened by the power of love, equality, and freedom. Thank you to all the people who make Fogartyville possible. Amen to that. And not only that, Sally Griffin donated, Pat Monahan. We know Pat from the station here. Matthew Mitchell and Bill Trotel and Margot Schneidlock and an anonymous volunteer donor. So keep them coming. I'm really, Alvaro and Bob, I'm really amazed. I don't recall having this many call-ins last year.
In such a brief period of time. Yeah, I think we're benefiting, Tom. Well, we're benefiting the Peace and Justice Report and the fact that this is the end of the 24-hour challenge.
Yeah.
It seems that many people were tied up yesterday and said, we have to get that donation in today. And by the way, the Peace and Justice Report's on. So, you know, that is a show that's worth listening to. And I want to make the point, Tom, that the 700 nonprofits that are eligible for the
right
during the Giving Partner Challenge. But thanks to you, mostly, we have, since the last Giving Partner Challenge, we've probably had over 50 nonprofits on our show we have interviewed, and we have given voice to their concerns and the issues that they address. And that's why we are so important to the community. We're a resource for all the different organizations. We open our doors to them, but they can come on the air anytime. They can have public service announcements on the air. All they have to do is fill out a brief form and send it into the station. So, Tom, we are a worthy recipient of all these donations, the station and the Peace and Justice
Report.
Well,
we appreciate it. That's for sure. Alvaro, did you have something?
Yes, I think it's a show that the community appreciates the show, appreciates the station, and appreciates the gentleman who's right now bringing us a wonderful information.
I have a comment relating to health care. I remember when Obamacare came into being, and all the people were making a big point that they say virtually 40,000 people die a year of lack of health care. And I was saying to myself, I said, 40,000 people, 2 to 3 to 4 times that much. If people do not go to the doctor and they do not go to the hospital when they don't have health care. So they're talking about the whole country. That's a drop in the bucket. It's many, many times 40,000 people because of lack of health care for the people who need it.
Well, speaking of aid, we're talking to Jared Cozy from On the Spot Aid. And the website is onthespotaid.com. Jared, you also are a registered Narcan distributor. Tell us what's involved there and how you apply that to your work.
That kind of falls under like the third category of what we do. Mm-hmm. because we have a community outreach with our organization. And in that, we are a Narcan provider for the state. As a matter of fact, we are the only one in South Sarasota County. And so we order Narcan through the state. We go out, we give opiate awareness and Narcan awareness classes, how to administer it, and we pass it out to the people. And I know sometimes people look up, and trust me, being a paramedic, and for anybody listening, I can say I was there on the road working on the ambulances during the major, when the opiate epidemic hit, and I can tell you it can become frustrating to those in the healthcare field. But nobody gets better if they die.
Of course, yes.
So that's the whole purpose. As people, we want people to get better. We want people to get healthier. And sometimes, you know, just being able to give them that second chance,
sure,
is great. So what we'll do is we'll go out and we'll give these classes. And a lot of organizations have requested them, and they keep Narcan on their, at their organization now on hand.
Okay.
We've had some of the unhoused population come up to us and say, hey, you know, so-and-so over here is starting to use really heavy, and I'm getting scared. Can we have some Narcan?
And you give it to them?
Teach them how to administer it, give it to them, so they're not waiting those precious minutes for an ambulance to show up. Somebody can be right there immediately for them.
Sure.
We also, in that whole social outreach thing, we're working to establish CPR classes for other organizations that the nonprofits, first aid and CPR with it, and so we kind of have a lot going on our social outreach program.
Now your work is mostly in South County, is that right?
We are mostly in South County. That's where we are. Uh-huh. Our offices, well, uh-huh, when I say offices, our building is based. Uh-huh. We're there at 655 North Englewood, uh-huh, and this is a perfect time to, we have a close partner we work with called Epic Community Center. Epic stands for Empowering People in Christ. Ronnie Jackson, okay, he kind of runs that, and we rent a space from them, and they have social workers next door and everything like that. So when that homeless person does walk into our building,
uh-huh,
we can get them, walk them right down to the Epic Community Center and say, hey, this guy needs some social worker assistance. This is something that's not in our lane, because we want to stay in prevention. We want to stay in medical lane. We're not social workers. We know health care.
Gotcha.
So that's what we do.
I know you're accepting donations this morning on the Giving Partner, on the spot aid. If you go to the Giving Challenge, not only WSLR, you can put in any one of 700 other nonprofits, but one I'm recommending right now is On the Spot Aid. They just put that in the search field. Would you like to expand further north or have another facility, or what are your plans?
Oftentimes, most of what we do is in South County. We do come up to Sarasota to a place, and you know, I'm kind of hesitant to drop names, but I'll say this is a place that we come to that is an amazing place that does a lot for the unhoused community. We're up here once a month. Mm-hmm. We come up here. We were invited initially by an organization called Sail of Freedom, which is...
Oh, I know them.
They work with human trafficking.
Yeah.
And we got there, and we're like, wow, this is something that we could use some help. They could use some medical help, and we could, sure, come up here and be of great assistance. We would love to expand, mm-hmm, in other places. The problem is, like any other organization, volunteers.
Oh.
We have to have volunteers available for it. We have, uh-huh, to have that medical personnel that can show up and be there. And although we're doing over-the-counter stuff, we always want that person who is able to assess, because there are times that we can't treat that patient or that client.
Not enough people, you mean? Or?
Well, it's something that we can't do. We're not a clinic setting.
Right.
We're,
right,
not a sterile place. We're not...
Yeah.
Anything like that. So that kind of brings us back into that whole community service thing. We actually have a vehicle, mm-hmm. that we use. It's the orange Subaru, we like to call it. And it's a lot of people see that Subaru and they say, there they are. And we're kind of recognized by it. As a matter of fact, I've seen times that some of the homeless people weren't going to come to an event and they seen this orange Subaru there and they're like, hey, I'm going to stop in because I need this looked at. But we have an amazing volunteer, and Bob, if you're listening, I want to say thank you for all that you do, because Bob, I've been able to call Bob and say, hey, Bob, this person really needs to go to a clinic and be seen. Can you be there? And he's fast to jump in there. Sure, just tell me when I need to pick him up. And so in South County, there are two clinics that we actually work with. Those are physicians on staff. They have everything in there that could possibly be needed. For down in the Inglewood area, you have Inglewood Community Care Center. Does amazing work. And up in the Venice, Nokomis area, you have the Good Samaritan Clinic there. Mm-hmm. And both of these clinics are doing great work for those who are uninsured, often unhoused, or even below a poverty level. So we actually, that falling into that whole community outreach thing, we use that medical transportation to get them there, because oftentimes our clients, just 10 miles away, they don't want to walk 10 miles.
Oh, of course not.
So who could if you're sick?
Yeah.
So we often pick them up and we take them there.
We're talking to Jared Cozy from On the Spot Aid, and the website is onthespotaid.com. They're taking donations this morning, as are we. If you go to givingchallenge.org, you can search for WSLR, or you can search for On the Spot Aid and donate. And whatever you donate, up to $100 is going to be doubled. So that helps them. That helps us promote people like them. If you give to WSLR and you also give to On the Spot Aid. And we feel very privileged to get to know these organizations and to help them out. That's our job, is to bring the community together and let the community know about each other. And I wish you the best. Any final thoughts for our listening audience?
I just want to say one thing. And 21 years of being in EMS, we see some of the, in healthcare, we see some of the worst things out there. We turn on the news every day and we see some of the worst things out there. And when I first came on the spot, our board sat down after a couple months and said, what has been your best experience, or what has been the best thing for you? Well, I couldn't think of, hey, you know, because I believe in what we do, for one thing. But the only thing that I could think of, the first thing that came to my mind, was personal growth. Because the personal growth that I have seen in the work that we do, everybody out here, everybody in the world is stressed right now. The whole world is busy as could be. And one of the things I'd like to say is that since I began with On the Spot, I learned that there is good in this world.
Yes.
There really is. We may not see it until you're in it. Anybody who says, who's in that situation where they're just tired and they're angry, I'm going to say, hey, come out with me one day and volunteer. Find a place to go to, and you're going to see people from all walks of life. You're going to see people from all religions, everything. They're all working together to bring that good. You're not going to see it on the news. On the big cable news, I should say. You're not going to see that.
Right.
You're going to see that once you're in it, and you're going to find out, hey, the world is a beautiful place.
Wow. You know, we need more of that. We need to get out there and see the work people like you are doing, and it restores our faith in our country and our people. We are a strong people, the American people. I believe that, and you're an example of what gives me hope, and your organization. So. What do you think, Alvaro? Bob?
I think it's amazing. I think it's a beautiful thing. Yes. And the volunteer aspect, it's just, you know, clear. We have so many volunteers supporting the station here, and well over 100 with the programmers and the other volunteers who work at Fogartyville and the station. But the opportunity exists for volunteers with all these different organizations. This is a prime example that people really feel the satisfaction and the meaning is restored to their life. You know, all the people who retire, they come to Florida, they're looking for things to do. A good percentage of them are volunteering for organizations like this, and it's really so meaningful and gives meaning to their life and the people that they have an impact on.
Alvaro,
yes, thank you. I think it's wonderful that there are so many people or a group of people, or groups of people doing this wonderful work. At the same time, I think it's angering to some of us that support needs to be carried out by volunteers. I mean, there's plenty of money for war. You know, why isn't there, you know, sufficient money to house people, to provide for them, the needs that they have?
Yeah, richest country in the world, some of the worst has health care among the industrialized.
In fact, we're causing. I mean, not we, but those in control are causing the anguish and the punishment people are suffering here in the country and outside the country.
Yeah,
you know, we need to mention the genocide going on in Gaza.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, we do.
When I was a youngster, say 10 or 12 years old, I realized it was poverty in Appalachia. There was so much going on in the United States. I mean, this was back 65 years ago. And I could see it as a young boy that something was not right here. And it's still the same situation. We should take care of everybody who lives in the United States. We should provide housing. We should provide health care. We should provide food, you know. But that isn't the way it is. So that's why all these organizations are necessary, and why WSLR and community radio is so necessary to this community. And we're just fortunate to have us to give voice to organizations like this, and to a meeting place. And Fogartyville's having 3 or 4 or 5 events almost every week for the last 2 or 3 or 4 months. Authors giving book talks, forums on news, on the media, and there's so much happening here, and it's all related to the community. And so, Tom,
and it reaches far and wide.
Can
it reaches
I hear
far
an
and
amen?
Wide. Some of us heard of those events 100 miles away in Tampa.
Well, we have listeners in China.
So, but
because of the web.
yes, and but the events at Fogartyville, you know, they reach far and wide.
Yeah.
I wanted to echo what Bob was saying about as a little boy noticing these things, and not that I hadn't seen it before, but when I first came, the first time that I saw tons, a couple of hundred people who lived under a bridge and beyond the bridge in tents and things like that, in setups like that. As a little boy, I was watching that and totally amazed and perplexed and understanding that there was a problem there. So there was something wrong there.
Uh-huh.
I saw children, adults, elderly people walking through the street. As we were going to school, they're walking away from the school settings and all that to a church to be fed. And I remember thinking, there's something wrong. There's a problem here, you know? It's a big problem.
Wow. You're right. All right. Well, Jared Cozy, thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And On the Spot Aid is doing its work, and we're amazed and appreciative. Thank you so much. I've got to announce a few donors here. Brian Bono, excuse me if I mispronounce these names, Dave Peterson, Jan Lovelace, Ross Stovall, Eileen McDermott, Casey Wedging, Ellen Collard, Diana Bregman, Grace Ingram, Sean O'Brien, Jason Owens, B. Black, Brian Bono again, Elizabeth Hammer, Maria Spilleri, Colleen Altman, and Carolyn and Rich Rossigno. And thank you for listening, and thank you for donating. And please help out the other nonprofits that need our help. As Oliver has said, it's too bad they need all that help, but they are there. They're doing good work. And take a look on givingchallenge.org and find those. Search for different organizations that you might want to help out. And I believe we have some more donations coming in. Anyway, thank you. Thank you, Jared. Thank you for the work you do. And she's going to take a picture here for our website. Get Jared in the picture here. Bob, you can't take Bob's picture. He's in New Orleans.
Sirens are going on outside. The lightning and thunder. Our taxi driver said tornado is possible. So it's quite a day here in New Orleans. So I hope it all clears up for the festival tomorrow. Getting it all done in one felt swoop today.
Guess who we have join us now, Bob? You can't see him. Johannes Werner.
Great.
And I want him.
So appropriate.
Yes,
I was
indeed.
Even thinking that was the back of my mind. We want to let Johannes know how important what's going on in Sarasota, and Johannes and the news team are covering on a daily basis.
We've ramped that up 2,000% in the last year or so, and Johannes is the news director for WSLR. He's responsible for getting together, he and, his interns and reporters, responsible for the newscast you see. What is every Wednesday and Saturday? Wednesday at 6 p.m. and Saturday at noon. Is that right, Johannes?
It's Wednesday, 6 p.m., Friday, 6 p.m., and Saturday noon.
Okay.
Three times a week
you can hear the news on WSLR. But not only that, but this is what I love. On the front page, you have some of your stories, and on your news page, you have all of your stories. You don't have to listen. You can read them.
We're not just audio. We're out there in the web. You can read. You can spread the word about us. Tell your friends that WSLR has consistent and great news that you don't find anywhere else.
That's right. It's local reporting of the city commission, the county commission, the school board, problems with the environment and with builders and overbuilding. Johannes, I know you have a news team. How do you figure out what to cover each week?
We have a guideline. Rule of thumb here is grassroots movements and working families. Okay. And that's really areas that other news organizations locally do not really cover. You'd be surprised how many of the local news organizations think about the economy as business. Ooh, the bell is ringing. This is actually good news.
Why is Jesse ringing a bell?
I'm sorry to interrupt here, folks. This is station manager Jesse Coleman. I just wanted to let everyone know that we just surpassed $50,000 in donations on the Giving Challenge website.
We
are getting there. Our goal is $55,000, but we need everyone to contribute right now if they can. 941-894-6469 or click on the Giving Challenge banner on the WSLR.org website.
There we go.
So,
Jesse,
good, but we got 5,000 more to go. Thank you, Jesse.
Last push, $5,000 for the news.
We got 2 hours, 2.5 hours?
Be the one.
Give
to community news. As you know, the news desert is growing. Local news organizations are shrinking.
Yes.
The Herald Tribune, great newspaper, daily newspaper. They used to have 200 plus employees just 20 years ago. They're down to 20 in their newsroom. And can you imagine how many people it takes to follow the twists and turns of county commission politics, city commission politics, school boards, hospital boards? This is all stuff that affects working families on a daily basis. And so much gets lost.
Yes.
I was at a county committee meeting yesterday, mm-hmm. in which five county commissioners unanimously dismantled in a matter of minutes, with not much discussion, a whole system of fundraising for social services. I'm talking about the United Way. For some reason, the United Way in Sarasota and Manatee counties has a target painted on it. And this is kind of awkward because United Ways it's as American as apple pie, you know?
Yeah.
It's supported by corporations and small businesses alike. It's supported by labor unions.
Yeah.
And at the center of its efforts is fundraising at the workplace. It's those workplace campaigns. Yesterday, the county commissioners unanimously stopped that fundraising mechanism for county employees. They were arguing we're giving one nonprofit a special benefit here, and it's not the way it should work. This is something that has not been reported. We'll detail this in the evening newscast. So this is the kind of reports that get lost if there is no one covering
it. That's right.
And with your contributions to WSLR, you will be supporting a small but growing news organization that is focusing on these gaps. So call 941-894-6469. Be the one to support community news. You have what left? 2 hours and 15 minutes.
That's right. And we've already had a bunch of people call in. Tracy Hostetler, Nina Skire, Elizabeth Celentano, and Citizen Action, Sarasota Citizen Action Network, Gregory Howell, Elaine Saunders, and so forth. We'll try to name them all better next week. But thank you so much for calling in. This is an amazing outpouring. It makes us feel like, well, we're doing some good work, I think.
And thank you, thank you. I call it the Bernie model. WSLR has support not from the wealthiest people, but from a lot of people. So it's these $25, $50 donations, and a lot of them that really make the difference for us. We're not an institution, we're a movement. There are lots of people who like what we do, and we feel that love. Thanks, guys. 2.5 hours left. No, 2 hours and 14 minutes left in this fun drive. Let's
keep calling. Johannes, do you ever take tips on that? You have an email address, news@wslr.org. Do you ever take suggestions from your listeners?
We do take tips, 15%. I'm just kidding. Yes. The email is news@wslr.org. Let us know what you know, what you've heard. Let us know if we're not covering something you think that matters to working families. We're here. We're here to serve. We're here to listen. Not only that, if you know a lot, if you hear a lot, you could actually become a member of the news team. We're driven by volunteer reporting. We have amazing community volunteers who are embedded, who know, who understand, and who cover the news that no one else covers.
So how do they volunteer to do that? They call you or email you?
Just email me at news@wslr.org and tell me what you would like to do, what you think we should be doing, and it's a conversation. It's a two-way conversation. Once I realize that you're serious, that you want to contribute, hey, there's training. If you don't know about audio, about Audacity and audio editing, we'll teach you. You will learn in no time. It's no rocket science. It's simple stuff. Your phone is the basic tool. You know, you can do a lot with your phone. You can record interviews. You can even edit interviews, although I prefer you do that on your laptop. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot of things just with your phone. It's quite amazing.
And they can also use that email address, news@wslr.org, to call in tips if they want to inform you or say whistleblower stuff or things you should know about, even anonymously, fine. I mean, and you can take that and work with it and investigate, right?
Right. Yeah. Yes. And what I really love is collaboration. I mean, this is really what we're about. This is our secret sauce. We're not on our own. We're trying to collaborate with other news organizations in town. We're not competing. We're trying to build on each other. And we're also collaborating within WSLR. So the Peace and Justice Report has been an important channel for us in terms of channeling news to the news, because you guys are doing amazing stuff. You're sitting down with people, you talk to them for half an hour.
Yeah.
And sometimes this is stuff that we don't know about. We're sitting in our silos. One of my favorite shows was actually you guys hosting two Republicans, and they were kind of talking to each other about criminal justice and the dysfunction of prisons. This is the Sarasota Public Defender and a former state senator.
Right.
They both have heartfelt desires to improve conditions of inmates. And the general repair and fix the general dysfunction of the justice system. And that exchange to me was one of the most educational moments I've had on the airwaves. So thank you for that. Support the Peace and Justice Report because they bring you people you don't maybe like to hear, but who will give you new angles to reality.
Right. And that research that Jeff Brandis does for his Foreign Policy Institute is just amazing. Gives you the facts you need to work toward improving the situation. And, of course, the criminal the prison system and the jail system and so forth in Florida is
eminently dysfunctional, needs to be fixed.
It needs to be fixed, right.
And this is Jeff Brandis was also great in explaining the dysfunction built into the Florida political system because the state legislature has a window of what? 3 years?
What is it?
4 years, 6 years, and they're gone. They're
term
limits.
Right.
And because of that, there's no strategic planning. There's no interest in planning long term. So just that perspective was worth the whole show already.
Every 6 years, we get a whole group of people who don't know anything about state government. And they have, what, 4 months?
They have to learn from scratch, yeah. And they have their short-term interests. They know they'll be out soon and will need another job afterwards. And
if they're good, yeah.
If they're good.
Wow.
So thanks for doing that on the Peace and Justice Report. Again, we're in the last push here. We've reached $50,000. Our goal is $55,000 in this giving challenge. We have 2 hours and 8 minutes left, so please call.
Yeah.
941-894-6469.
Right. And, you know, at 10 o'clock in 10 minutes, 9 minutes, we're going to hear one of the best news, national and international news shows around, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodwin. She's been here in Sarasota before when she was promoting her book. She's an amazing person. That coverage is amazing. It's something you won't hear on any of the other news shows or newspapers, really. She does on-the-spot interviews with people affected by what you hear around the world. I don't know how she does it, but it's amazing. That's at 10 o'clock, of course.
So this is us. Amy Goodman gave us the impetus years ago when she showed up in Sarasota.
Yep.
She was one of the first big supporters of WSLR. Join Amy Goodman. Become the next Amy Goodman for WSLR.
Right.
941-894-6469. It's 2 hours and 7 minutes left in this fun drive.
Bob, you still there?
Oh, yes. I'm enamored with everything that Johannes has been saying. And I'd like to mention that, of course, Johannes had his own show for almost 10 years.
You joined the station, Johannes?
More or less right after it opened, right?
You're Johannes? Digging up my past here.
Yes.
Yeah,
what was that show, Johannes?
It was called Florida Caribe. And I did it because I had a sense. People don't understand that Florida is smack in the middle of a world region called the Caribbean and Latin America. A lot of people are moving not just here, but back and forth between Caribbean countries and Latin American countries. You can feel it not just in agriculture, construction, and restaurants. You have it in music. You have it in cultural expressions that exist in Florida that would not be here if we were not part of this region. So that show, Florida Caribe, was trying to talk and put a spotlight on these links between Florida and the Caribbean.
You know, that's one reason I like the things we do at Fogartyville. We have two or three years ago, we had a series of meetings, Path to Peace in the Middle East. We had Jews and Christians and Muslims all talking, sitting in the same room, discussing the problems. I would like to meet more Caribbean, Hispanic, whatever, Cubans. I would like to meet them and talk to them. That does occur at Fogartyville, and I'd like to see more of that.
We have one here at the table running the boards.
Alvaro, tell us.
What's your story?
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. My story, you mean how I got here? Or?
Yeah, what's sure. How did you end up in Florida, of all places?
In Florida, I got to the United States. My parents moved here in 1963, and my mother came first. No English, no one to pick her up out of the airport alone, and organized herself. And in 6 months, she had my father here, and then 6 months later, they had seven kids here. My mother was 30 years old with seven kids. Wow. Yeah.
And you're the baby?
No, I'm one of the oldest.
From which country?
Colombia.
Colombia.
From Colombia. And we arrived in New York, in New York City. Very difficult for kids, fun, but difficult, you know, sort of life. We lived nine people in one room, against the law, of course. And the very nice landlord telling us, you know, you got to find another place because I'm going to get in trouble. And so we moved around until an uncle of ours showed up, and his one paycheck, he was making more money than my father was with three different jobs. My father had two full-time jobs, and he was a part-time cook in the weekends. And my uncle dragged him to New Jersey, to Dover, New Jersey, and that's where we grew up.
Oh, wow. So, yeah. Cool. See, these are the kinds of voices we want to bring to the community. These are the voices you cannot hear very often. Again, back to the good Sarasota County Commission yesterday. They deliberated about creating a workshop in which they want to explore the cost of illegal immigration to Sarasota County. What about the benefits? Yeah. There is something to be said about our economy depending on undocumented immigrants. And I say that very consciously, depending. If you talk about agriculture, if you talk about construction, if you talk about tourism, they all depend on undocumented immigrants. And here we go. We're talking about the cost only. Yeah, maybe they cost some in terms of social services, healthcare, but they bring work. They bring enrichment to this area.
I think another thing that needs to be looked at is okay, so we stop the flow of human beings. Why don't we stop the flow of capital? Why don't we stop the flow of goods and services? Why don't we stop the flow of military personnel and military equipment? You know, who would benefit? You know, at the end of that, you know, who would be harmed at the end of that? So you know, I think that trade. Let's talk about trade. Just trade with Mexico is larger than with all of the Western countries, all of the Western Western Europe. You know,
it's Mexico and Canada. Those are our main
trading partners. Is Mexico and Canada. That's right. And Mexico is larger than the Western Europe and Japan.
There we go. All right. So these are the kinds of deliberations you don't find easily anywhere else.
Not on the radio.
So
yeah.
This is what WSLR is about. We're into the last 2 hours and 1 minute. No, exactly two hours of the fun drive. So call now, 941-894-6469. Our volunteers are standing by.
Thank you, Johannes. Johannes Renner, the head of our news team. Every week, he puts news stories out on our front page and on the air. So that was Wednesday at when?
Wednesday, 6 p.m., tonight at 6 p.m.,
tonight
Friday, 6
p.m.,
and Saturday noon.
All right, Saturday noon.
Thank you, Johannes.
Yes, and the last few donations are coming in. We'll thank everybody next year. Thomas Hawking, Robert Wright, Anonymous, Andrea Dunn, Charlie Lenger, and if we forgot your name or mispronounced it, we apologize, but thank you so much for calling in. Stay tuned for Democracy Now!, the best news show for international and national news I know of, and it's starting right now.
I'm on the road, I'm gunning for the Buddha. All it takes is one shot to blow him away. Give me just one shot to blow his ass away.